Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather round the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people involved, and it all centers around the host and founder of the show, Carol Marx. Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. Let's kick it off right now with Carol Marx in conversation with Janice Heafy Durham. She's a former SVP, Senior Vice President of Advertising for the LA Times, and she's going to talk to Carol about her new book titled The Hand on the Mirror, A True Story of Life Beyond Death, published by Grand Central Publishing.
Those extraordinary events that happened a week after your husband died, what were some of them?
Well, a week after he died, we had a clock stop. It was a very large Ethan Allen clock. It was above the mantel on our fireplace. And in the morning, I take a walk every day. It's a ritual that I have. I'm a dedicated walker. So it's out doing my walk with our yellow lab. I came home, and I looked up at the large clock thinking, okay, I'm going to get my son up, who was 14 at the time, make some breakfast. It's around 7:30, and I looked. The clock said 12:44, exactly 12:44, which was the precise time of Max's death 1 week earlier. It was a stunning revelation to see this clock. I called my son, Tanner, come out and look. And together we faced the clock and said, how could this be? Now, this clock had been there for many years on our fireplace mantle, above the mantle, and never had it ever stopped. The clock was too large to lift down, so it was an odd event. We said, what could this be? We decided to rationalize that. I think it was our instinct, as humans often, is to rationalize things that we don't understand. We want it to be ordinary and fact-based, and seeing as I was a publisher, I was extremely fact-based in my journalism world. So Tanner and I together said, let's take that clock, what we're seeing, and let's just say that it must be a battery that has gone out. That was how we rationalized.
So and don't you think that you also rationalized it because of your upbringing as a minister's daughter, and you were taught what heaven was all about? So that kind of added to it.
That's correct, Carol. My father was a Presbyterian minister, and my whole life, you know, was based on the premise of a solid traditional Christian upbringing. So I never had any exposure to anything like this that was of another realm, a more spiritual realm, I would say. And then as the weeks and months ensued, there were many events that occurred. We had doors that would open and shut on their own, and sometimes we would hear knocking, but there was no one there at the front door. And we also had a very interesting occurrence where involving books. Max was a voracious reader. He must have read at least a book a week. And we had a very large library with thousands and thousands of books, literally floor to ceiling, wall to wall books. And on Father's Day, which was exactly 6 weeks after he had died, so it's around June 14th, Tanner wasn't with me. He was with his dad, his natural father, biological father, and I was at home. It was a Sunday, as I said, and I was playing a song from the funeral, a Celine Dion song, and suddenly I felt rather agitated as if I needed to go into the library. So I left our family room. I went into the library. I was walking around, and for whatever reason, I stopped at a certain book out of thousands. I pulled the book from the shelf, out fell an envelope with a card, and I saw Max's, someone had written Max on the outside of that envelope, and I thought, what is this card? And I'm embarrassed to admit, but it's true. I thought, maybe, did he have an affair, and I didn't know it. Oh, my goodness, it was a female. It's clearly written by a female. Anyway, I opened up the envelope, and inside was a beautiful Father's Day card that Max's mother had written to him 1 year prior to the day, saying, Dear Max, I have never seen you this happy in your life. It's because you have a family. It was so powerful for me, a moment where I realized that even though we lost Max, we were able to usher him out as a family. and that was, had a lot of meaning for me and helped me tremendously that day. And I wondered, how did that happen? How did I find that one book with that one card on the exact day?
An extraordinary, extraordinary occurrence. And then what really made me, you know, shake my head and believe but not believe, because it was so strange, but you have a picture of it, amazingly. And that is, on the first anniversary of your husband's death, you and your son saw something unbelievable on your guest's bathroom mirror. So tell our listeners, what was it?
Yes, Carol, I found this extraordinary powdery handprint on the bathroom mirror in our guest suite where Max had lived the last probably 5 weeks of his life. He and I were in separate bedrooms because it was, just became too difficult to sleep together with his illness. So he was more comfortable alone, and I had to go to work. He wanted me to get my rest. So anyway, it was a beautiful, beautiful day. It was exactly 1 year to the date of Max's death. So it was May 8th, 2005. Coincidentally, it was Mother's Day, which we just had yesterday. And so 10 years ago now. Anyway, it was Mother's Day, and Tanner and I were in the backyard. Tanner was 15 now, of course, and he was doing his homework. I was doing my work for the newspaper, as I always did on Sundays to get ready for the following week. And we decided we were hungry. I went into the house to make a sandwich, decided to wash my hands in the guest suite, which was right next door to the kitchen there, before I went in so I could just touch my hair up and wash my hands. And that's when I saw the print. It was the most extraordinary moment of my life, because, other than the birth of my child, because I saw this handprint and I said to myself, that is not possible. My eyes saw it. My mind said, you must be imagining it. So I called my son and said, Tanner, come quickly. Tanner came in, and together we looked at it. And at first I thought, I ought to ask Tanner, you know, did he play a trick on me? He's a boy, you know, a teenager. But it was silly for me to think that, ludicrous, in fact, because his hand was small and diminutive. He's a boy. This was a large male hand, very strong. The palm was wide, and the fingers were long, and very reminiscent of Max's hand. So together we looked at it, and I said, what is this? How could this be? And Tanner said, Mom, I don't understand. This is shocking. It was a shocking moment. So I don't know how you could do this with a water print or anything. It was a powdery substance.
But anyway, you saw the bones, didn't you? And that, how could you possibly see the bones? But there's a picture, an extraordinary picture in your book. And I looked at the handprint, and my goodness, it looks like an X-ray, because you can see the bones.
Yes, it looks like an X-ray. If I had to say what it most looked like, it would be an X-ray, because you can see all the bones. Plus, you can see where, you know how each of our hands is very individual with all the markings for the lines? You can also see that. So it was a combination of bones and just the lines we carry on our hands. And there it was. It was an unbelievable moment. Eventually, Tanner went out to play basketball. So I said, honey, you should just go take a break now, and I will be right out. So I photographed the handprint. And that was an amazing moment, as I said. The time went on, and interestingly, the handprint came back. We had, actually, they were in the form of an angel, several angels in 2006, the same substance, powder, but angels. And then in 2007, it was the other hand. So it started with the right hand, it ended with the left hand, and it was more diffused in the third sequence. You can see from the photo in the book that it was much larger, and it became as if energy was leaving it in the third year. Now, I was publisher of the newspaper throughout this time, and there was no way that I could investigate. I couldn't take it to forensics. I couldn't take it to our local police because Lou Blanis, who was the sheriff at the time, in fact, was a good friend of Max's, and once I would go out, it would have been public. So there was no way for me to get an analysis done as long as I was at the newspaper, because the newspaper expects the publisher to be in a very fact-based world, and this was clearly mystical and ethereal. So I didn't get any scientific evidence, but I did get the photographs, which I kept. of course, and then later, after I retired, I made the decision to investigate.
And that was so interesting, and you did that, and you had several other strange experiences or pictures in the book, which make it so interesting, of a rug moving bit by bit toward a hearth. And then what I really found unusual, you have photographs on an arm piece of furniture, actually of a footprint.
That's correct.
You must have been really taken back by those.
Yes, we definitely were. And it was interesting because I remarried in 2008, and my current husband has his degrees in engineering and accounting, his undergraduate and graduate degrees. He's a very, very straightforward kind of person, not at all spiritually inclined. And so with his background coming at this, it was fascinating because he witnessed with me the rugs, and he also witnessed with me the footprint. That actually occurred in our Sun Valley home where we live in Idaho part of the year. And he and I had been gone on our wedding anniversary. We came back, this beautiful trip we took up to the Middle Fork of the Salmon River in Idaho. We came back, and we came into our home, and there was this footprint. And what's interesting about it is our housekeeper had not been there during the time we were gone, because she only came on Wednesdays and we were just gone for the weekend. But also, that footprint, unlike the handprint, it changed over the 48-hour period. It altered. Originally, very much like the X-ray feel of the hand on the mirror, it had an X-ray powdery feel to it. On the chair, we made a decision to just let it do what it wanted to do. We photographed it, and you can see in the book, it moves slightly to the right, and then it has a little line that goes down the foot that eventually comes down the foot, and then it extends off of the toe. So it was one way when it presented itself to us, but then again, over the 48 hours, it changed and altered in its character, which was phenomenal as far as an experience. To see it change was an amazing thing.
That's Janice Heafy Durham in conversation with Carol Marks. Her book is titled The Hand on the Mirror, A True Story of Life Beyond Death. It's published by Grand Central Publishing. And if you'd like more information, go to thehandonthemirror.org. Carol Marks returns in just a moment in conversation with Dr. John Ward, one of the national experts on hepatitis, talking about baby boomers being at a high risk to develop the disease. That's next when A Touch of Gray continues.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. The National Institute of Mental Health reports elderly depression to be a serious public health problem. Recent research shows 15% of persons over 60, or roughly 6.5 million Americans, are suffering from depression, while 25% state they suffer from sadness. Health practitioners that care and treat the elderly, including primary care physicians, are unprepared to detect and diagnose depression. Let's review depression's warning signs. Are you experiencing feelings of helplessness or sadness, most of the time lasting 2 weeks or longer? Have family members, friends noticed social withdrawal, self-neglect with personal hygiene, appearance, clothing, loss of appetite, weight loss, and maybe dehydration? Has your physical pain increased? Has there been a major loss, illness, or surgery recently? If any of these scenarios exist, an evaluation by a qualified MD is recommended. Successful treatment of depression would include both psychotherapy and medications. I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. And here again is the host of the show, Carol Marks, in conversation now with Dr. John Ward. He's the director of the Division of Viral Hepatitis at the National Center for HIV/AIDS, Viral Hepatitis, SDT, and TB Prevention at CDC. He's going to talk about baby boomers being a high risk to develop hepatitis.
Now, what is hepatitis C? And how common is it in the U.S.?
Well, it's a fairly common infection nationwide. About 3 million people are living with this infection. And hepatitis C is a infection caused by a virus, the hepatitis C virus. What we're here to talk about today is the big health risk that hepatitis C poses for baby boomers, those persons born between 1945 through 1965, who have a risk for this infection because of transmissions that happened several decades ago before the virus was discovered in 1989.
And what were the transmissions? What were the ways that they would have gotten it?
Hepatitis C virus is primarily transmitted through blood contact. So, you know, that can happen in healthcare settings when proper infection control is not in place, which was more common back then than it is today. Blood transfusions were not screened for hepatitis C because the virus wasn't yet identified. And then personal behaviors such as drug use behaviors, such as snorting cocaine or injection drug use, even on one or two experimentations, could result in transmission. And we were cataloging hundreds of thousands of cases of hepatitis back then that have now translated because this virus sets up shop in the body. And stays in the body for decades, the people who became infected in the 60s, 70s, and 80s are now experiencing an epidemic of liver cirrhosis and liver cancer.
Now, the unfortunate part of all this really is the fact that you don't have symptoms of it until the disease gets really advanced. Is that correct?
That, unfortunately, is the case. It's a silent infection for years and years and years, and as a result, you know, people don't think they have it, and even physicians and other healthcare providers underdiagnose it because they simply don't think about it.
You've set up some new guidelines that people that were born between, 1945 and 1965 need to get tested. How many lives do you think this part of our population will be saved if they do get tested?
Well, we estimate that a one-time test for hepatitis C for all baby boomers can help us prevent 320,000 people from dying of hepatitis C over the coming years.
That really is something. And now when it comes to treatment for hepatitis C, is it more available now because of the Affordable Care Act and the fact that insurance companies have been paying for the treatment?
Well, the first benefit of the Affordable Care Act is that it provides support for recommended prevention measures. And in this case, that's true for hepatitis C testing of baby boomers. So this blood test is widely available throughout the country in doctors' offices. The test can be quickly ordered and is usually available at no extra cost for patients. So, you know, often many baby boomers go in and see a doctor or a clinician at least once a year. It's a perfect opportunity for a baby boomer to ask for that test rather than assuming that that test is going to be ordered by that healthcare professional. Take charge of your health and ask for this simple blood test and know for certain if you have this life-threatening infection. And if you do, know that there are cures there for that infection. And if you don't, you know, be appreciative that you've taken that action to protect your health and don't have to worry about that health risk for the future.
And today, what kind of new drugs are available for those who do test positive?
Well, there are several new drugs on the market for hepatitis C with additional ones on the way. The really exciting aspect of these new treatments are that for the first time in the history of medicine, you can cure a chronic viral infection. That's never been able to be done before. That's now been achieved for hepatitis C. Let me give you an example of that. With these drugs, you only have to take one to several pills a day by mouth for 12 weeks, typically. That's about 3 months. And you have a 90% chance of cure. And the studies then tell us that if you're cured of this infection, your risk of liver cancer and dying of liver-related disease from hepatitis C drops by 90%.
That's, you know, a wonderful thing. Now, there are, as you said, there are also some new drugs that are about to come on the market, and I want to know, you know, are they going to be even better than the present drugs? But some of them are so expensive, and I wonder if insurance companies are going to pay for the newer drugs that will come on the market that bear such a high cost.
Well, the costs are, you know, an issue. The CDC doesn't have a role in setting drug prices. You know, there have been reports that the drugs have fallen in price by almost 50%. So the cost for treatments, which have been a concern for payers and health systems who have to buy these medications, you know, have been a problem. But we know in our studies that these interventions are very cost effective, that testing for hepatitis C provides the same benefits per dollar for dollar as getting screened for cholesterol or getting screened for breast cancer. And so this is a cost-effective, life-saving intervention that begins with every baby boomer stepping up and receiving this test from their healthcare professional, either by the healthcare professional offering it or by that healthcare, by that baby boomer asking for it.
Now, Dr. West, if you could leave our listeners with just one piece of information about hepatitis C, what would it be, and is there a website where our listeners can go to get more information about this disease?
Every baby boomer can take a simple step toward better health by receiving a test for hepatitis C, and if positive, be entered into care that can save their save themselves from life-threatening liver disease and liver cancer. They can go and get more information about hepatitis C from our website here at CDC at cdc.gov/no more hepatitis. That's KNOW. No more hepatitis.
Dr. John Ward, in conversation with Carol Marks. If you'd like more information, go to the website cdc.gov/nomorehepatitis.com. And it's no more hepatitis, KNOW, morehepatitis.com. I'm Michael Harrison. A Touch of Gray continues in a moment. Michael Harrison here with you on A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. Very proud to be with you on this program. This program has been on the air in one form or another consistently now for over two decades. Kind of runs below the radar. It's heard on weekends on great talk radio stations around the country. And what I'm really proud about in terms of this program, in which I have the opportunity to serve as anchor, not as host. Carol Marks is the host, and I certainly am not the only voice on this show. We have a roundtable of outstanding personalities, experts, and broadcasters. What I love about this show is that in an industry marked by concern, focus, obsession with youth, and believe me, I'm about as young thinking as anybody you'll meet. Sometimes I'm even accused of being immature. But and so I'm all for that, and I'm all for looking ahead. But I'm also for fairness, and I'm also for respect. And the media in America, driven by, obviously, Madison Avenue and commercial concerns, focuses primarily on young people. And if somebody's over 50 or 55 or 60, they quite often find that there's a lot lacking in terms of what's available in the mainstream media. So this program, which was conceived and developed by Carol Marks more than 20 years ago, originally was called Senior Focus, and it evolved into A Touch of Gray, and I became involved with it along the way, is something that really provides a service in as much as it unashamedly, unabashedly, unapologetically brings information to people via this wonderful medium of radio that is of use, of interest, of service, of comfort, of support to people over 50 years of age and their families, which is why I say at the beginning of the program, children of all ages, because so many people in their 50s find themselves in a situation that has been kind of accurately and colorfully termed the sandwich generation, meaning they have children, adult children still living with them, and
abiding by the rule that came down a long time ago, honor thy father and thy mother, they have their parents living with them. In many cases, these parents are in their 80s, 90s, and are living at home. And the amount of pressure that can be put on somebody dealing with adult children and senior parents all under one roof is extraordinary, and it's a phenomenon that in many ways I applaud. I'm all for families staying together. But also there are people who are in need of support and information. So in many ways, A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, is in fact a program for children of all ages. But I salute Carol Marx. I think that she has done and continues to do a remarkable job. And she does it under sometimes the worst of conditions because, like the rest of us, she's not getting any younger either. But she drives herself to research and get the information needed and select guests and topics. And not only that, she travels around the world and brings information from other countries on how their healthcare systems operate and how the services that they provide for senior citizens there are taken care of and done. And she brings that information back, not to mention she acts as a model, as a role model for people to get up and get out and live life and do things. And she's done everything from, she's explored, you know, if there were four corners on this planet, as the saying goes, she's been to all four of them. Check her out at the website, atouchofgray.com. Gray is spelled with an E. And I just wanted to mention that she is one fine lady, and we're grateful to be involved with her in this project.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. It is important to address a personal emergency response system in your home in case of falls or injuries. AARP encourages their use for many older Americans to enhance independence and security, especially for those living alone. Many brands of PERS are available on the market, and seniors should consider their specific needs and budget before deciding on a system. The Federal Trade Commission provides free online information. One can get a system as basic as wearing a necklace or bracelet and push a button that will transmit to an installed response center through your landline telephone. In the event of an emergency with falls, chest pain, a suspected intruder, a press of the button will have a 911 ambulance dispatched to your home, even if you cannot reach your phone. PERS systems can be rented or purchased through local hospitals and are affordable and serviced by representatives. I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We're going to be joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, who a few moments from now is going to be talking with Dr. Stephen Richardson. He's a retired urologist who co-founded Western Urological Clinic. He's going to talk about the first and only BPH outpatient treatment. BPH stands for benign prostate hyperplasia. And that, I think, is enlarged prostate. Richard will know better than I, better than me. Is it better than I or better than me, Richard?
I don't know why you think I would know better than you, because
no, you're supposed
I
to say
suffer
both.
From it more than you do. Is that where you're going with this?
No, I'm talking about you and I, as opposed to suffering from benign prostate hyperplasia.
I know. Well, the serious point about this is that it is an enlarged prostate, and it does cause frequent urination, and especially in the middle of the night. How many times do you have to get up and go to the bathroom, which cuts down on your sleep, which makes you cranky when you wake up, which leads to all sorts of problems.
I know that you already conducted this interview, and we will be debuting it worldwide on this program in the next 5 or 6 minutes. Does the doctor get into the differences between an enlarged prostate and, of course, the fear people have of cancer, that they're not necessarily the same thing, one does not indicate the other?
Well, yes, and absolutely every man over the age of 70, I think 90-95% of men suffer from BPH, mm-hmm. but thankfully not that high a percentage suffer from prostate cancer.
Right, right. So one does not necessarily indicate the other, but as you get older, it is harder to get through the night without having to go to the bathroom, and that wreaks havoc on the psychology of sleep. I mean, it interferes with REM sleep, deep sleep. It could cause fatigue. And so many men I know, and I guess to a certain extent myself, you get up and you go to the bathroom, and it's really hard to get something going.
And some nights you can get right back to sleep, you know, and come right back into bed and go to sleep. But other nights, you know, you're up and you're lying in bed. And you know what they tell you, if you're lying in bed for more than 20 minutes and you can't go to sleep, you might as well just get up, do something. Hopefully not something too stimulating, you know, nothing that'll tease your brain, but something restful. And then shortly after that, you'll get tired and you'll go back to sleep. But the worst thing is lying there for an hour, 2 hours, knowing you have to get up at a certain time in the morning and stealing a glance at the alarm clock every few minutes and going, oh, man, I'm still not sleeping. Oh, what's going on here?
Do you find talking to people that you know and friends that so many people have different kinds of sleep disorders? I know we're a little off topic in terms of prostate, but the topic of sleep challenges, snoring, sleep apnea, which I'm not sure where snoring ends and sleep apnea begins, but they say that sleep apnea is very dangerous, and thus I guess snoring is dangerous. It used to be like, you know, you make fun, you know, cartoons of people snoring, but actually they're saying snoring is not a healthy thing. Not to mention for your brain and for your blood pressure and for all of that, but for your marriage or your relationship. You know, you see all these subtle ads out there, you know, end miserable snoring, put this in your nose or whatever. Doctor invents technique that's guaranteed to work, and yet I wonder.
Yeah, like most of those as seen on TV things that sound good, but when you actually get them, they don't work so well. I mean, I've tried the nasal strips that you put on, the breathe right type things, and they help a little bit. And I guess if you have a small snoring problem, it might take care of it. But, you know, there's all sorts of reasons for snoring, but it seems age-related, doesn't it? The older we get, the louder and more frequently we snore.
Now, well, I gather if you said you use those strips that you have a snoring situation personally. I snore when I gain weight. When I am, and those who know me know I have a large pendulum between being thin and being heavy, and that's one of my issues. And when I am over a certain weight, I snore. And when I am under a certain weight, I don't snore. And when I'm around that weight, it depends on which side of my body I'm lying on. If I lie on my left, I don't snore. If I lie on my right, I do snore. And it's been years since I've slept on my back. So weight, I think, plays a role in it from my own personal experience.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, sleeping on your back is the prescribed way to sleep. They say that that is the healthiest way to sleep. And it also, in terms of your face, wrinkles. If you're sleeping on your back, you develop fewer wrinkles than if you sleep on one side or the other. Did you know that?
Is that why the left side of my face looks like a...
is that the side you sleep on?
I don't have symmetry in terms of my wrinkles.
Well, there you go. That could be it.
But I don't know. All of these things, you know, we're talking about men right now. Women claim that menopause makes sleep very difficult.
I'll tell you another thing that helps keep you from sleeping, and that's if you have a dog who likes to jump up on the bed every once in a while.
Now, that is ridiculous, you know.
Ridiculous?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's, you know, that could be controlled. I mean, that's not... you know, it's a dog.
Barbed wire around the bed, for example? Well, I mean, what would you do?
I would not. All right, you're getting into something really heavy here that's heavier than anything we've talked about. The aesthetics, not to mention the hygiene, of sleeping with an animal. Now, you want to talk about this right now? We might wind up getting emails, not friendly ones.
Did you have a teddy bear when you were little?
Yes, I still do.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. That's why you don't have a dog sleeping on a bed. You have your teddy bear.
No, I don't have a teddy bear, but I did have a teddy. I think everybody had a teddy bear. But the fact of the matter is that the idea of sleeping with a dog has a tremendous history that goes all the way back to the cavemen. I mean, the relationship between you know, man and dog or humans and dogs is a very deep one. You know, the dog is man's best friend. But sleeping with an animal, you know what they say, you lie with dogs, you come up with fleas.
I was raised by wolves, so I don't know anything about that.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Richard Neer speaking with Dr. Stephen Richardson about a very serious subject, benign prostate hyperplasia. And then Richard will be back, and we'll finish up this conversation about this and that. When A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. You may recognize the symptoms of elderly depression, loss of appetite, weight loss, social withdrawal, problems with hygiene, neglecting personal well-being, or even a sadness that lasts over 2 weeks. Sound familiar? Here's what you can do about it. Exercise, eat well, and don't forget to socialize. Researchers at Duke University suggest exercising at least 3 times a week to keep the body and mind healthy. That means swimming, walking, and maybe light exercise classes with the approval of your medical doctor. Another key to happiness is maintaining self-esteem through clubs and groups. You might consider the gardening club or a musical choir. And lastly, treat your body well and it will thank you by feeling well. That means practicing good nutrition and eating well-balanced meals daily. Naturally, the needs of patients vary, but feel free to consult a geriatric specialist to make a personalized treatment plan. I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at premiergeriatricrn.com.
Retrievers, Labradors, Goldens are the main breeds that come through our door, but we'll train anything with 4 legs and a tail. My husband and I train hunting dogs and also have a boarding and grooming business. And our dogs, they're athletes, and we feed a very quality food. You can't get enzymes in a commercial dog food because they cook it at such a high heat, but adding Dynavite to their diet has every single dog in my kennel looking better than they have ever looked.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite's the bomb.
Tell everybody we know about Dynavite.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite. If it's working, don't quit.
When I get down to the bottom of my box of Dynavite, it's time to place my order.
Dynavite.com.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com. You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined, as promised, by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, in conversation now with Dr. Stephen Richardson. He's a retired urologist who co-founded Western Urological Clinic, and he's going to talk about the first and only BPH outpatient treatment for men.
And he's here to talk about a new breakthrough on BPH, or as we call it. It's the first and only BPH outpatient treatment for men. And BPH is benign prostatic hyperplasia. And doctor, what it amounts to is men over 50, it becomes a problem where you have to get up in the middle of the night and go to the bathroom. And it affects a lot of them over 50. And when you're over 70, it affects just about everybody, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And causes symptoms that are related really to the blockage of urinary flow. And so ordinarily, patients start out with some frequency, urgency, difficulty starting their stream. But ultimately, this problem of getting up and having to urinate at night becomes a real issue because the sleeplessness associated with it often affects them with depression, low productivity the next day. And so letting it go until the symptoms become quite severe really is not a wise thing to do. And so those people with early signs of BPH should at least talk to their doctor about the available therapy that is now just recently approved by the FDA.
Dr. Richardson, we see constantly television commercials for herbal remedies and pills you can take that decrease this. Do those work, or is that more snake oil?
A little bit more on the snake oil side. There have been some studies done, particularly with a substance called sulfonamide, but none of the studies have shown that any of these herbal compounds are any more effective than placebo.
Yeah, so it's just the psychological effect that you think you're doing something and maybe it helps a little bit. Now, this is a procedure which indicates some kind of surgery, and of course, when you're talking about surgery down in that nether region, men and women go, I don't know about that. Tell us how it goes and why it's an outpatient procedure.
Well, I should mention right off the bat that not only have I worked on this in terms of the research, but I have undergone the procedure myself. And the advantages of this procedure are that it is office-based, it's done under local anesthesia, it's a relatively short procedure, done certainly within an hour's time. The effects are immediate. I had relief of my symptoms the next day. The downtime was minimal. I worked 8 hours the day following the procedure. And unlike all the other forms of therapy that we have had available to us over the years for BPH, this particular procedure is not associated with any sexual side effects.
Well, I think that's a big concern for men because they think, boy, you're going to operate down there. Look out. It's going to affect me in bed. What actually do you do? Do you widen the tube? Do you go into the prostate? How does this work?
Yeah, they're able to visualize the internal prostate, and they place clips along the side of the prostate that actually compresses the tissue. And so that opens the tube of where the urine passes through the prostate and has been very effective in relieving the symptoms.
Now, why does that tube shrink or get blocked? Is it something in the environment, something we eat? Is it just aging? What are the causes?
It's pretty much an aging issue. As we talked about before, by the time we're 70, 90% of us are going to be having symptoms. Some get it earlier, and that's just on an individual basis. But what happens is the prostate surrounds the urethra, and as it gets bigger, it starts to squeeze the urethra, and that's what causes the blockage of urine.
And, of course, I would imagine that a lot of men feel, because we've had a lot of publicity about this and it is a serious problem, that they think, uh-oh, it's prostate cancer, and this is something very, very different.
It is very different. This is a benign growth of the prostate. And it's very, very common where prostate cancer, although it does affect a lot of men, is nowhere near as common as BPH. So the majority of patients who are having these kinds of symptoms are going to have benign disease and not cancer.
Now, if there are people in the audience under 50 or 50 to 60 that haven't experienced the problem yet, is there any preventative measure they can take, more liquids, any particular dietary thing, exercise, is there anything they can do, or is it just if it's going to happen, it's going to happen?
Well, I think maintaining your general health, certainly diabetes can bring on the symptoms much more quickly. We all have a sort of our own internal clock, and our prostate's going to get big and cause symptoms eventually.
All right. So is there a website or a place where someone can call and get more information about this procedure?
Absolutely. The website is realbphrelief.com, and we also have a call-in center, and the number at the center is 888-677-7889. And they can get valuable information at either one of those locations.
Now, Dr. Richardson, I know this isn't necessarily your area of expertise, but does insurance generally cover a procedure like this, or is this something that's considered elective and non-covered by a lot of policies?
No, it actually has been approved by Medicare. So all Medicare patients will get coverage, and it's been a little bit spotty depending upon the region, so it varies state to state. But I would certainly, if someone is interested in having their BPH treated, I would contact both their insurance companies and their doctor, and then they can find out what their coverage issues are.
That's Dr. Stephen Richardson in conversation with Richard Neer. For more information, go to realbphrelief.com. Richard Neer returns in just a moment when A Touch of Gray continues.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. 1 in 3 American senior citizens injures themselves in a fall every year. That means that nearly all of the country's senior population is at risk of a life-changing injury that may result in a loss of independence and a long period of rehabilitation or even death. The most common injuries related to falls are head trauma and hip fractures, according to the Centers for Disease Control. So how can you prevent such an event? Have a home safety evaluation from a licensed physical therapist, routine visits to your medical doctor, exercise 3 times a week for strength and balance training, semi-annual eye exams, and a monthly review of your medications by a doctor or pharmacist. Every time you walk out the door or even get out of bed in the morning, you run the risk of injuring yourself by a fall. Taking these preventative measures, you do minimize these chances. I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
My golden retriever, Sundance, is a lot more playful now. She has more pep and energy than I've seen in years.
Tons of energy. Petey is having fun again. He's got a shiny coat and a good, healthy weight.
Molly's been having 4 scoops a day. She pushes her little bowl all the way across the room, emptying every last single crumb. She has slimmed down and gotten this puppy look.
She's got life. She's got energy. She's got stuff to give.
We get asked all the time when we're at shows, how do you get your dog so healthy and shiny and glossy?
DinoVite.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Family will be on Dinovite for the rest of his life.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dinovite. If it's working, don't quit.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DinoVite.com.
Whoa, a new digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Oh, I'm glad you like it, because I can't wait to toss the big stereo. And now that we got your dad that big HD TV he wanted, we can throw out our old TV, too.
Hold up. You can't just throw out electronics.
Really?
They need to be recycled or donated.
And how would we do that?
It's so easy, Mom. Today, recycling electronics is just as easy as buying them. GreenerGadgets.org has all the info. We just enter our zip code to find a certified recycling center nearby. There are thousands of them, and new ones are being added all the time. Some of our local stores are even certified recycling locations.
I like that.
Did you know that some of the stuff in our old electronics could be used to make new products and conserve natural resources?
Well, okay then. Let's gather them up. What was that website again?
GreenerGadgets.org. We just enter our zip code and go.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we continue now our conversation with Richard Neer. Richard, before your interview with Dr. Stephen Richardson, we were talking about just some of the things that get in the way of sleep and cause us to get up in the middle of the night, everything from snoring to, enlarged prostate to menopause. We didn't mention it, just worry and anxiety. People think about things. And then you mentioned the dog jumping on the bed. And then we switched gears and we were talking, for those just joining us, about, the aesthetics and the hygiene of sleeping with an animal. And I know that you have a love for dogs and that you keep your dogs very clean. I would imagine people, if you are going to sleep with a dog, and I'm about to put that down because I know how much it means to people to have a dog. I'm not a big fan, personally, of dogs being on furniture and dogs being in the bed. Not so much that they're dirty. I just don't like hair all over the place. I find that dogs leave a lot of hair. But if the dog is very clean and you keep the dog, washed and clean, the hair could just be the worst of it. But have you noticed that some people get so attached to their animals that they forget that it's an animal and they forget that it might be dirty? They actually don't see their own dirt, which is something I've noticed when you go to people's houses, that they are so used to their own schmutz that they don't see it. It's kind of weird.
Well, it is. And, I'm in the process of selling a house, and there's a house that I have that, we've taken all the furniture out of it, and the realtors are going through it, and they're saying, oh, this and this and this and this are wrong, and I don't see it. What do you mean? And you're right. You get used to your environment. You get used to whatever state of cleanliness it is or whatever state of repair it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, it's no big deal. Whereas people looking at it for the first time, oh, how can you live like that? How can you tolerate this? Whereas, hey, I'm used to it. There's a hole in the wall. So what?
Mm. Well, I have stayed at your house a number of times over the years, and I have to say it's nicer than most hotels that I have stayed at. As a matter of fact, I'm starting to notice how schmutzy hotels are, something I didn't notice that much when I was younger, and I'm not sure whether hotels are not as clean as they used to be or I'm just becoming wiser. But I find I do not like staying at other people's houses because of this syndrome that we've discussed. When people say, stay with us, I usually say, no, I'll stay at a hotel, because I have been in some pretty awkward situations where I have been invited to be a guest at people's houses where they'd be insulted if I weren't there, and the places are filthy. You ever been in a situation like that where the bathroom is dirty and they don't have...
Yeah.
It's a lousy feeling.
Yeah, yeah. And then when they invite you subsequently, you have to come up with excuses. Well, no, I don't want to put you out. Oh, it's no trouble at all. You got to come up with an excuse not to stay there that makes it sound like you're being gracious to them.
Exactly. And they don't have a clue. They don't have a clue that they have dirty dishes or that the knives have little flecks on them or that there's dust bunnies floating around or the bathroom toilet wasn't cleaned from the last people that were
there.
You're
becoming very anal retentive, I've noticed.
Well, it's just, it those things bother me.
Mm.
Don't they bother you?
Well, it depends. I mean, little things don't bother me, but obviously, I mean, there was one place, and I can't say where it was, but the one place I stayed at, and the toilet wasn't clean.
Well,
the bathroom was there was toothpaste residue all over the sink.
Yeah,
it just was a turnoff.
Yeah,
if it's your own, it's one thing.
That's,
you know, I'll just clean it up. But if it's somebody else's, ooh,
that's one of the deep weirdnesses of the human condition. We think our own blank doesn't stink. Okay,
right.
That's it for now. We have gone through a disgusting conversation, but it struck a number of truths. Richard, pleasure talking to you as always. Thank you. Thank you, Beverly Santanello, our producer on the front line. Thank you, Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, inviting all of you listening to join us next weekend for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show from Florence.